This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hey, this is the Bish here from the Hump Day Crew. You're tuned into one of our podcasts. Enjoy!
Hello, I'm Janina Gavankar. You might know me as Poppy from the L Word, and you are listening to the Hump Day Crew on Joy 94.9.
We could say our next guest is almost famous, but she already is. Being a premium blend of comedic talent, she has been a bit of a paranormality, and she is generally the last comic standing. She may be a sophomore when it comes to cooking, but perhaps refrain from calling her the world's dumbest, as she may tell you to shut up and die like an aviator. She's been dishing it up with LA celebrities and has even had brunch with Bridget. Please welcome to the Hump Day Crew, the master of the Comedy Coliseum, Erin Foley.
Hello, that was quite a mouthful.
It was, because you've done so many things.
I like them all strung together. It seems like things are going smashingly well.
Now, Erin, I've heard a rumor from the LA gay grapevine that you can't cook. Is that true?
I can't cook at all. It's pretty pathetic. I have two sisters, and they can cook really well. They put me to shame. I can reheat, I can heat, and I can reheat.
Is that why they had to think of a web series just to teach you how to cook?
Yeah, I thought that was bizarre when they pitched that idea to me. I was like, is it the point that I'm going to look like an ass while everyone comes in and cooks around me? But that actually was really fun. I learned some like easy breezy recipes that even I can handle, so that was pretty cool.
Fantastic. We were chatting to Liz Keener a month ago, and she told us she taught you a shrimp stir fry. How's that all going now? Is it palatable?
Yeah. Keener was hilarious. That was super fun. Yeah, her recipe was totally like, the only thing about that was I had to cook like a lot of like hot oil in the wok, and it's scared the crap out of me. I thought I needed some goggles and a helmet or something for that. It was slightly terrifying. I made her go closer to the potential burn site, and I stood behind her while she put the vegetables in. So. I'm not an idiot. I don't want any facial burns while I'm eating my stir fry.
Aside from your cooking talent, you've just wrapped up playing Mrs. McKee on Sophomore. What was that like?
That was really fun. It came out of nowhere. I was doing some shows years ago in Manhattan, some stand-up comedy shows, and this guy like remembered me from one of the shows, and we had a mutual friend, and I got a call out of the blue to like fly to Rochester, New York, and play Patrick Warburton's wife, but it was cool. They're trying to get like more money to release it and go into the studio thing right now, so hopefully that'll turn out all right. I've never played a mom before. That was weird. Just because I always feel like I'm at the proper age to be a mother, but I feel so like I can't right now with my responsibility level and income. But it was really fun. It was such a good crew, and it was a pleasure. It was really fun.
And, of course, being a mother, you have to learn how to cook for your kids, don't you?
Yeah. Luckily, I actually can cook a mean breakfast. I'm a good breakfast chef, so I was a... pretending I was like making eggs or something like that. A really good omelet. I can cook like a really good omelet, so that's what I bring to the table. All the other meals, forget it, but breakfast, I'm on fire.
And that's the most important meal of the day.
It is. I eat breakfast like all the time. Probably because I can't cook anything else, but I do enjoy it the most anyway.
Now, Erin, we know you best because you are a stand-up comedian. As a funny gal, do you kind of find that when you're playing movie roles or film roles or any kind of acting role that you get typecast?
Actually, you know, it's sort of been the opposite. I haven't really played anything funny, per se. Like the reality stuff, you know, it's funny, but... The Almost Famous and the mother role and a bunch of stuff here and there, short films, they're all serious, which is fun, but I'm really looking forward to, like, a fun role that's, you know, you're just laughing the whole time. That would be awesome.
And do you think, you, in a sense, that you kind of actively seek roles that aren't so funny to sort of give you that differentiation?
I seek anything. You just want to work out here. It's like you're up against like 8,000 people per role. It's harrowing. So really, it doesn't matter. But I think if I had a lot more choice, you know, I'd probably pick half and half because I really enjoy dramatic roles as well. But it would be fun to, like, you know, sink your teeth into some slapstick stupid stuff because that's so fun, you know, versus, you know, something that makes you go home and cry.
Yeah.
I always would rather joke around. Life is depressing enough. Yuck it up.
Something I found recently I came across on Facebook is the idea of Brants. Now, they're the all-in-one bra and pant solution, and I hear you're the advocate of Brants.
Oh, yeah. You gotta love a bra and pants sewn together. You never know what to choose in the morning.
No, you wouldn't.
Slip on one of those puppies.
The funny thing is, I actually went to order one, but they've been sold out.
Yeah, really? They're selling like hotcakes, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, even the pics of the woman wearing the brand, I mean, it wasn't all that alluring, but they've sold out.
Yeah, it's one of my best friends, Carrie. She's completely and utterly retarded. It's awesome. or maybe I shouldn't use that word. I apologize. She's ridiculous, I guess would be the proper word. She's super fun and crazy, and she's always calling me with ridiculous ideas, and of course I say yes to all of them. So, although my mother saw a picture of the brands, like, on my cell phone, and she's like, and I said, oh, that was a short film we did, and she's like, oh, Erin, you don't need to be doing that type of stuff. And I was like, wow, it was a joke. She saw me in like basically no top because it was like a sewn outfit together, and she thinks that like I'm doing some sort of like porno films in LA. And I'm like, no, it's Brants, the all-in-one bra pants solution.
You should give her one to make her feel better about it.
Yeah, that would be her worst nightmare.
She can show off how successful her daughter is.
Yes. Oh, yeah. You know you're very successful when you're modeling brands.
Absolutely.
You know everything's coming together.
Now, you've been doing some other modeling yourself. I hear you jumped on board Adam Busker's No Hate campaign. Now, what's your take on this whole Prop 8 being upheld?
Oh, well, it was a horror. It was like the best day, you know, the election day for Obama. And then 2 hours later, I think we had like a window of like an hour of joy. And then it didn't look so well with the Prop 8, and I just, you know, you get spoiled. I've lived in Manhattan my whole life and then been in L.A. for 2 years, almost 3 years, and you're around like-minded, gay-friendly, politically, you know, political of the same, you know, mind, and you think everything's going well, and then you realize it's not. California's an enormous state, and a lot of other organizations outside of California, you know, pumped in all this money and spewed all this hate. And they also came up with a lot of different slogans and messages that were untrue. And unfortunately, a lot of people bought into it and voted against Prop 8 or voted for Prop 8. And I think actually that was really one of the points right there. People didn't know if they were voting yes on gay marriage, or yes, on Prop 8, which took away gay marriage. Like, it was really confusing to a lot of people, and it certainly didn't go the way I had hoped it would have gone.
I heard that there was a comedy skit on how confusing that message was, where celebrities just jumped on board going yes on yes, no on no, and they made a big skit out of it.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, it really was. I mean, the vote was so close, and I think, you know, it's hard to say what went wrong. I think maybe not enough. I don't think we played enough hardball. You know, it seems like we're the ones that are, you know, being marginalized. We're the ones that are at a disadvantage, and yet our campaigns are so nice, and their campaigns are so full of hate and awful. You know, just this horrible rhetoric, and yet we seem to lose. So I think we have to step up. And they were pumping in all this money from the Mormon Church, and it was just horrifying. It was really, really sad. I really thought we'd get the double victory, you know, on the force, but unfortunately it didn't go that way.
Do you think, given how much awareness Prop 8 has created, is actually it can be given a positive spin? So next year when it is put up an appeal, do you reckon it would probably get an overturn?
I guess, you know, you have to look for every silver lining when you're dealing with, like, a civil rights campaign. You know, you have to stay positive, and being in L.A. and just going to all the marches, it was so positive, and it wasn't, you know, people were angry, but they really turned that into a lot of positive energy, which was fantastic to see. It really felt like you were part of something, you know, like the bigger picture, and that was truly wonderful. And if anything, you know, can come out of it, and seeing all those marches in different cities and the campaigns almost globally, that it sort of created all this awareness was awesome. Yeah, I mean, you always have to look for something positive, you know.
Now, Erin, as a performer, you've done stand-up comedy at various gigs across LA and across the US. What is the strangest thing you've seen at a comedy gig?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, I've seen people, like, implode on stage. I've seen people start screaming at the crowd because it didn't go well, or, you know, they were confronting a heckler and they just, you know, almost had a meltdown. Because I never think you have to take any of that so seriously. I got hit by an onion ring. Someone threw an onion ring at me. I thought that was pretty funny. Not at the time, but now I think it's hilarious. I was auditioning for a show and I was in the middle of a joke and the power went out in the club. That was pretty funny.
Oh, no. So that was a joke in itself.
Yeah. It was actually Last Comic Standing. It was pretty funny. I was like, oh, I guess you didn't like that one. But that actually helped me because I got to start over. So. really surreal, I guess, is the proper word. I don't know. You know, it's just 10 years of, I just think the whole genre in itself is bizarre. we actually go up there and tell jokes in front of people. It seems a bit odd, although very fun. But when you really kind of, you know, break it down, it's a little bizarre.
Well, it must be. It's an amazing gift to have, the gift of making people laugh. And let me ask you, what made you want to become a comic and spread that kind of laughter across the US or across the world?
That is a good question. I was en route to grad school and got sidetracked. In all honesty, I moved to Manhattan to hang out with my sisters, and I've always wanted to live in New York, and I was going to go to grad school in New York and teach, and did some improv comedy in college, kind of just because I loved laughing and I was funny, and decided that would be a fun thing to do. And sort of got the comedy bug, and I was like, well, I can always go to grad school, and started doing some improv at stand-up comedy clubs, and really fell in love with stand-up, tried it, bombed, but saw the potential, and just sort of started going from club to club and following, like, a Jim Gaffigan and Brian Regan and Judy Gold and kind of all my favorites, Wanda Sykes. And when you're in Manhattan, you're spoiled. You get to see the best of the best. And I don't know, one thing led to another, and I just love to write and found out I love to perform. Kind of did everything later in life. That was, like, mid-20s, which is late. But for me, it was, you know, the perfect time. And then I just never went to grad school, and to the chagrin of my mother. But other than that, it's worked out pretty well.
So your sidetracking actually turned into a career.
I'm sorry?
Your sidetracking actually turned into a career.
Yes. My, hey, maybe I should try that, hit the 10-year mark last year. So. we're sticking with it.
Fantastic. And after your 10-year mark, where are you heading now? What's up, coming up for Erin Foley the rest of the year?
I just got off. I was doing quite a bit of traveling the first 6 months, and so the next 2 or 3 months, I only have a couple trips back east, which is nice. I just shot a pilot for E, the channel E. I don't know if you get E. I'm sure you do.
We do.
So it's sort of like a weekend update type of show, a comedy news show, and I'm one of the anchors, and that is being evaluated right now at the network to see if that's going to get picked up. So start praying, Australia.
We will get on our hands and knees and pray for Erin Foley.
Yeah, and then a fun sort of reality comedy travel show. I'm supposed to shoot that mid-September. And then let's just cut those two TV things right going on right now, and then you're constantly auditioning, and, you know, who knows is right around, you don't know what's right around the corner. You just kind of say yes to everything and hope it all works.
And 10 years later, you could be in another job.
Yeah, I mean, one thing leads to another, God, I could be, like, cooking professionally on the audition one of these days.
And food poisoning will spread across the country.
Yes, and I will poison America. I hope not, but it could happen.
So if you do poison America, do you have any plans of coming to Australia?
I'm dying to come to Australia. I actually did the Montreal Comedy Festival last summer and met all these Aussies. They were super cool. I don't think I've met anyone that wasn't cool from Australia. You breed cool people. So they worked for some network, and so it was in the works to try to work with them. And then I just auditioned for the Gay Fest, the Mardi Gras Gay Comedy Festival. I'm not exactly sure what it's called, but I believe it's in February, maybe?
Is it the Melbourne International Comedy Festival, that one?
Say that again?
The Melbourne International Comedy Festival?
I think maybe that's it. Maybe it was this, I'm not sure exactly what it was, but I hope that went well, so hopefully I'm really dying to come and perform, and everyone, fellow comedians all over, you know, throughout the years that I've done comedy and everywhere from, like, you know, Sydney to Melbourne to Adelaide, they just said they have, like, they're just the most fun and the best place to do comedy, and so hopefully one of these days soon I'll be over there.
Oh, fantastic. And Erin, what have you heard about Australia other than that we breed cool people? What are some of the misconceptions you've heard?
Honestly, really, I'm not just because I'm doing this interview, you really don't hear a lot of bad things apart from, you know, people getting eaten by sharks, but that happens in Long Island. So, you know, you just hear the super friendly, easy to travel, you know, people are really affable, big boozers, and I've seen that firsthand. Boy, can you people drink. Of course, everyone puts away the Foster's myth. They said there's a lot better beer.
There is a better beer, yeah. BB.
I have two really good friends that actually, brothers, they grew up in Adelaide, and they moved to Brooklyn with their families, and oh my God, they can out-drink. They actually now just opened up a bar, so it's perfect. but they're lovely, super fun. I hear all kinds of things that I enjoy. I enjoy traveling and drinking, so and the beach. Wait.
Australia's perfect for you then.
Yes, exactly. Huge tennis fan, so I really would love to get to the Open in January one of these days. So maybe I can combine the comedy with the Australian Open.
Who was your favorite tennis player, Erin?
Well, you know, I'm on the Nadal bandwagon. I think he's awesome. He's super fun to watch. Andy Roddick has always been a favorite of mine. For women, it's kind of changing. Like, you know, I was a big Kim Clijsters fan, and now there's talk of a comeback on her end. And you know, the Safina, like, she's looking good. I've always been a Serena and Venus Williams fan, and so there's, and of course, Amelie Mauresmo. You got to cheer for the little gay lady from France. I've always been in her corner. You know, the players are. There's sort of this new wave, this new crop, which really, I sat there and watched the Roddick Federer heartbreak final in Wimbledon, like 2018 or whatever it was in the fifth. Oh, God, that was a tearjerker. You got to hand it to Federer. I mean, he's amazing. I was just really hoping Roddick would pull it off, you know.
Well, Erin, thank you very much for joining us on this scorching hot day over in LA. I hope you cool down and hopefully invest in an air conditioner sometime soon.
Yeah. I'll send you a heater and you can send me an AC and it will be all set.
We'll do a nice little swapsies.
Yes. Well, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Hey, it's Ginny from the Hump Day Crew. Thank you so much for tuning into one of our podcasts and for supporting Joy 94.9 and the Hump Day Crew. We will catch you next Wednesday from 6:30 a.m.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.